The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, this is going to be good. Air Sport have announced the details of its 2020 Allianz Leagues coverage. Over 7 weekends, Air Sport will broadcast a total of 15 football and hurling games. Coverage kicks off on Saturday, the 25th of January, with the home of Saturday Night Live GAA action broadcasting 3 matches across its channels. Joe Brawley is with us, hence the slightly delayed start there. You were talking about Logan Paul and who was the other guy?
KSI.
Is that what it was? Were you watching that?
No. It was just there was a fella who interviewed me earlier. He's got his own YouTube channel. I'd said to him, you know, he's got a great opportunity now to fight naked in the octagon.
Yeah.
You know, for... How much did they get those boys? Like 15 million?
No, they made loads.
Coins or something?
Yeah.
You get yourself in shape, Gilroy.
It's on its way. It's on its way. We're swimming a mile and we're doing a triathlon this summer. You know, the midlife crisis is coming to all of us. Is the midlife crisis what's happening to you now that you're on pay TV? Is that the... How are you standing in this one?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, obviously, I was hurt by what happened with RTE. And... Because it was very shocking, really, in its way. And, you know, to be told a few days after the draw in All-Ireland final, which I thought was boisterous and created great debates. And, you know, I mean, I was on Radio Kerry the following night. The fella rang me and he says, would you come on to stand over your outrageous comments? I said, oh, absolutely. And you can imagine the hours fun there was in Radio Kerry. After which the producer rang me and he says, I want to apologise for some of the intemperate remarks of our listeners. But, I mean, where do you get that? You know... It's our recreation, our fun, our joy, you know. And anyway, to be told 2 days later, oh, you know, you made an outrageous and unprofessional comment to Pat Spillane at 11 minutes past 3 in the drawing game, which I had actually forgotten. You said to him, would you stop pulling my arm? I said, like, really? This is where we are. You know, micromanagement. I mean, the new head of sport who'd come in was clearly gunning for me from the outset. Now, because I'm in the freelance world and you can sort of rise above and you're not used to that, I felt like I can handle this, you know. You just rise above it. And, you know, everything became banality, you know, statistical heavy. And he brought a statistician in, and I mean, this statistician, who's a nice fella, but I mean, he was glorified. And very quickly, things became much more controlled and scripted, and don't say that and don't say this. And I mean, before the All-Ireland final, for example, we got a script. This is what you'll be dealing with, and this is what your video analysis. I said, you need a newsreader. You don't need me. And I thought, you know, all of this stuff about, you know, because people sort of said, oh, you know, but me and Joanka, I thought that was all a bit of fun, you know. I mean, like, this is all good. The audience loves this, you know. I mean, if it's one thing I have, it's a very strong connection with audience, because I've been doing it for a long time. And I love the telly. And I'm a fan, you know, and I'm very good with strangers. So it was just a perfect fit for me. And, you know, when you're sitting in the studio and you're getting your phone buzzing, I mean, you're like the politician being controlled by the spin doctor. This is the head of sport. I mean, I'd never seen the previous heads of sport. You get the odd text saying that was great fun, great telly, blah, blah. If you figures you're great, that's it. You know, they let you at it. The only time I met them, really, apart from some friendly phone calls, would be contract renegotiations, which were always dead easy. And then to be in this situation where you're getting text after text after text, while you're waiting to go live at half time, and it's a statistics group, it's a WhatsApp group that he had set up for the analysts, which he dominated. You know, it was like, I mean, I can show you some of the screenshots, like, which I took just to, you know, so I didn't have to pinch myself. Was that true? And you get, like, floods of this stuff. Read this out. Kerry's productivity rating in the first half was 23 or 1.2. I mean, and statistics have their place, but this choreographing of the programme so that, you know, and I was warned early on by a producer. He said, look, he's gunning for you. He rang me, a pal of mine. He said, look, he's gunning for you. But still, when it came, I knew that I was being treated differently, but still, when it came, you think...
Because you knew it was final at that stage, or did you think there was...
No, he said to me, you know, he said, look, you know, and as a result, your contract's not being reviewed, and I said, what? And I said, we've had a great final, we've had so much fun, you know. And then, He said, oh, we'll keep it all confidential. And I said, I've got to appreciate that. It's going to take me a while to recover from this, you know. Because it's a very public humiliation as well. You know, because I've been a part of that for, it's been a big part of my life for 20 years, you know. And what a blast I had. What fun, you know, all through the years. And that public conversation, you know, I go to 30, 40 GAA clubs a year. And you're welcomed with open arms, you know. And, you know, like, people get upset because they love the game, but it's Pantoville and stuff, you know. And so anyway, he said, right, we'll keep it entirely confidential. And then the next day in the Mirror, there was a headline saying, oh, Joe Bowie's RT career was over. So, like, I was betrayed as well that way, you know. And then I got a text, you know, I suppose you'll be wanting a token of appreciation. Like, fuck me, like.
What, a text?
Like a text from the head of sport, something like, you know, I suppose you'll be wanting a token of appreciation.
What, like a gold watch kind of thing? Is that, was that, was that, was that the invitation?
Clock,
or was it
clock, right?
Okay, because your time's up. Now look.
So
up.
Then I just thought, look, you know, I mean, this is
to just for the sake of covering ourselves here. Declan McBennett is not here at the moment, and I'm sure there's another side to the story.
Well, I'm surprised you haven't brought him here.
We'd like to invite him on at some point in the future to give his side of the story, just to even things up.
Sure.
But look, I think balance is overrated in most of these conversations generally. It's just that.
Well, it's one of the. You know, it causes inertia because you say, well, you can't say that because the entire population of Kerry isn't in the studio. You know, and don't forget, this is us talking about Gaelic football. I mean, David Goff texted me, whenever, obviously, the headlines came out then after the Mirror had done that, and he texted me and he said, I should have given that free out. You know, which about sets the bar right. We're fighting over a yellow card here.
Yeah.
You know, I think that. As soon as David gave the penalty, you know, and I disagree with him about that penalty, it was, for me, it was never a penalty. And there was a feeling immediately when you're live and it's spontaneous, you know, you're thinking, well, Jesus, the Kerry boys have got to him, you know, the stuff about he shouldn't be refereeing the game. And then when the big call started to flow thereafter, by half time, I mean, that was the big talking point. You know, the game had gone to be stupendously exciting, of course, and extremely tense. But I mean, if you had said to me coming out of that studio afterwards,
you're getting sacked for this.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the game, I don't know if you remember when it was still live, I gave Pat a hug and said, you must be so proud of your nephew. I just want to say you must be very proud as a family. You know, the way he performed today for 10 minutes was pure Spillan, and Pat was very emotional about that, and he thanked me afterwards as well. Like, me and Pat are like an unmarried couple, you know, that don't particularly like each other. No, that's not true. We do great affection for Pat, and we've always had that. So I told Pat, and he just couldn't believe it, you know. And but there you go. I mean, you can't control this narrative. He's the head of sport, and that's the way he does business, and that's fine, you know.
So that's the end of your RT career at that point. Is there? Is
Yeah.
Is that why you're going to air? Does that counter?
Well, I mean, I love the public conversation. I've always been used to it, and like, you know, I've got the newspaper thing with the Independent, it's great, and I have great freedom there, and it's very grown up. You know, it keeps me hooked in, and it's important too because I do a lot of evangelizing. I mean, my real satisfaction in life is the altruistic side of my life, you know, the communitarianism, you know. So I'll be at, I said to you, 30, 40 clubs a year, you know, do organ donation events regularly in communities, maybe 15, 20 a year. You meet people. You know, you hear the stories, it deepens your life. You know, you increase your empathy for the world around you. And the immediacy of TV is very good from that perspective, you know, because, you know, people are less and less reading newspapers.
So you think that TV gives you the platform to do that?
Well, I know that it does. I mean, I could say something. I mean, I could, like, I remember the time, the Sean Calvin thing. David Hickey rang me that evening. He said I was in a bar in Killarney and there was a standing ovation afterwards. Now, you can't beat that immediacy, you know, or the Mayo one's going insane, you know.
A standing ovation for your Sean Kavanagh.
Aye, bit. Or the Mayo one's going insane after you've said something, you know, or the Tyrone ones. And yet, you know, I'm constantly in clubs in these counties, you know, you're invited. Because they know your real self. They know that that's a part of that is. And also, we're only talking about football. And if you're not speaking your mind, well, then it's pointless.
That's part one of our interview with Joe Brawley. Obviously, we did this yesterday. And in the meantime, we've asked the head of sport of RTE, Declan McBennett, to address some of the issues and to come on air and have a chat with us about it. We haven't heard from him yet. We do hope to hear from him and to have him on. As I said earlier, I'm sure Declan McBennett's going to have his own version of the story. about a lot of these issues, and in particular about how the story was leaked to the press, whether it was somebody in RTE or somebody outside RTE. But let's get back into it. Here's Joe talking about his relationship with Peter Canavan, the hardiest footballers that he's come up against, and he also continues to explain why he decided to join Airsport.
Do you get a buzz from the feedback to things that you were saying if you actually hear, oh, there was a pub in Clarny with the commentary turned up at halftime?
You know what, like, you know, I mean, you could sense. I mean, I knew at halftime when I started to go after David with Kieran, obviously. Kieran was a wee bit, but when he saw me going in, then he was in, you see. It's a great counterpoint. It's a great debating point then. Well, is that right or is it wrong? Yeah. Should he have given the penalty or not? Should he have given him the first yellow card or not? You know, was it a setting off in truth? Or has he, you know, has he succumbed to pressure? It was a great debating point. Whether it was right or not, you know, we're not discussing world hunger or paedophilia, you know. We're talking about the game that we love, our recreation, as we would in the bar. Geez, I wonder, did they get to?
Yeah.
Ah, no, they didn't.
Well, I mean, certainly that was a conversation in the stands that we were having. Like, when it happened, then that's your view of what...
It was so dramatic, too. You know, the penalty was so dramatic and from left field. And I spoke to David about it afterwards, you know, when the dust had settled and we were having a pint and that, and he said, look, you know, for me, if you watch the video again, he has put hands on Clifford before the ball has come and he has moved him from where the ball was coming to about a metre away, and that's why I gave it. You know what, it is actually right that he did do that, and I wrote that subsequently, you know, and but again, I come back to the point. Like, these are, in the end, Gaelic football. And reporting on it's our love and our recreation. And the community aspect of it was,
I think, at the heart of what was going on with your opposition to the Sky deal, right?
Yeah.
And so that...
Well, it was part of a philosophy that I have about the GAA. But, you know, that argument has been rejected. It's been rejected at Congress. There have been pitiful attempts to change it, which have now gone, that's all in the background. We're 10 years down the line, you know, and increasingly you sound like a Luddite in your own ear. You know, my children, for example, what are you talking about? You know, they're mainly watching YouTube. I mean, I don't know if you saw the BBC Trust's report released last September, where the average age of a BBC One TV viewer is 61, you know, or the Broadcasting Authority report here, 2019, where the audience between 15 and 25, the TV audience has collapsed by 25% in 2 years.
They're watching on phones and they're...
You know, YouTube streaming. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was down in Hope House, the rehabilitation facility in Foxford and Mayo, famous, and it was founded in September 1993 by two Sisters of Mercy. It was a great month. No?
Monday All-Ireland.
Like this guy,
he was just born.
Yeah, what's that?
Yeah,
That would explain.
Yeah, no, not born. 94.
I wasn't born. No.
Right. Okay. A star in the sky.
Well,
saying,
but they founded Hope House themselves from scratch. What a humanitarian endeavor. And they're elderly nuns now, and there they were. We were meeting, and of course, in great good health. You know, as nuns tend to be, there should be some sort of medical teams and psychologists should be going down to see what the secret of their longevity is. But in any event, there they were, and the first thing they said to me was, we're delighted you're on here. We get it free with our mobile phone package. And I didn't know that. You know that there are like 600,000 subscribers.
Look, you're...
You get Air TV free.
I know, yeah.
I did not know that.
Well, I used to work for them, so I know all that.
Yeah, and anyway, they were, whilst halfway through the meeting, they had to interrupt it to listen on their mobile phones to Midwest's coverage of Kilmaine playing Nagail in the All-Ireland Junior semi-final, another glorious defeat to a Mayo team. But...
You changed your minds.
I did, yes.
And that's like, I think people are entitled to change their minds if you're...
I think the argument has been lost. And Jarlath Burns, a pal of mine, he's going to be the next GAA president, he said to me, like, leave that alone, it's done. It's never changing. It's never changing. And of course, you've got a completely new landscape for media. And you just have to accept sometimes, look, I've made the argument, I fought the fight, it's over, that's it. I'm a GAA man first and foremost.
I think the other big thing is that Now TV, you can plug into the side of your telly for a tenner and get any game you want.
Well, the GAA's got its own subscription channel as well in GAA Go. And again, I've been on an odyssey for hospice. I'm the ambassador for the Mayo Roscommon Hospice and heavily involved with the fundraising. So We built the Mayo Hospice, opened it, it was formally opened in September past, and now we started the Roscommon Hospice on Friday morning. Sean Mulrain dug the spade into, sank the spade into gravelly ground, and through that odyssey I've met GA people all over the world. I mean, I ended up doing a coaching day in upstate New York in Setanta for like 140, 150 kids. It's just like an Irish commune there in upstate New York. And for them, GA goes a lifeline, you know. And so the GA have that subscription model. I mean, one of the arguments that I've been making is that the GA should own and produce its own TV for all GAA.
I think that there's a good chance that's where it's going, actually. They're learning how that works.
It's going to be a subscription, but the beauty of that will be that, you know, the GAA will control that and will make sure, obviously, that the output gets everywhere. I don't know how you achieve that, but I think that people are so used now
We're spending $5 billion-ish on getting broadband everywhere. Once that happens, literally everybody will be able to stick it on YouTube, and it can be a private YouTube channel, and you can pay a subscription to the GAA and they can take most of the money for it. And it sounds like pie in the sky, but
it's the reality. And we see it all the time.
Would you work for Sky if would that be a potential end of the line?
Well, you know, there'd have to be a lot of inducements.
I mean, Joe, I was thinking about this. Someone
asked me this morning, and a big thing for me is, you know, because I knock about the hospitals far more than I should through the organ donation stuff, the transplant stuff and all that. And a big thing for me is the fact that in the hospitals, you know, our most vulnerable people don't see the games, the big games on Championship Day. And I'm sure it would be a cost of pittance. You'd know better than me, but it would cost a pittance to put Sky into the main hospitals and make it available on match day. Because I've been in, 2 years ago, Dave Hickey and myself were doing a sort of a tour, which we do at Beaumont, you know. We're doing then when Dave was still there. You go up and you see the coordinators, the transplant coordinators, see what's required, how things are going. You know, you spend a day there. And Dublin were going to be playing, I can't remember who it was. It was a Saturday that we were there. And there were a load of dubs with their Dublin jerseys on. You know, long term, very, very ill patients, like transplant patients. And getting ready to listen to it on the radio.
It was the Monaghan game. You did that game on the radio that night.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
I can't remember. Right. But getting ready to listen to it on the radio. Where I was in Killybegs Community Hospital last year. We played an organ donation game up there. And it was so much fun. And beforehand, Barry McGowan brought me, the great Barry, the great unheralded maestro of Donegal football. He brought me up to the community hospital, which is a beautiful place up there. And again, they were all bemoaning the fact that the following day they weren't going to be able to see the Donegal match.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that if Sky were saying to me, look, we will work with you and we will provide the games free in Irish hospitals, I think, first of all, it would be great for goodwill. And secondly, it would be the sort of thing that would encourage me to... Like, this is all theoretical.
Sure, yeah.
Not about publicity move for Sky.
Oh, it'd be brilliant, you know.
What would the relationship, what would the chemistry between Joe Brawley and Peter Canavan on screen be like? Two Ulstermen vying for the microphone.
See, you've got to understand this. I, at heart, am a fan. You know, so for me, I mean, Peter Canavan was a god of Gaelic football. One of my treasured photographs in the house is that Peter came and played a game on an All-Star 15 that I was allowed to select whenever St Bridget's opened their new pitches. And there's a great photograph of him coming up to me when we're about to get a penalty to discuss the penalty strategy. And I treasure that photograph. You know, Peter is, and also a tough, a hard, hardy wee bastard. Like, I mean, he was a pure winner.
Yeah.
And, you know, so...
He still is.
You know, look, I've had many's the frosty exchange with Peter. But in the end, you know, he's a grown man and he'll pick up the phone and say to me, look, can you do X, Y, or Z for me? Can you do this? You know, and the answer is always yes.
I love that phrase, hardy wee bastard. Who is the hardiest wee bastard from Ulster, in your opinion? Or like nationwide, I presume you'd pick someone from one of your neighbouring counties.
I thought probably the strongest man that I ever saw on a Gaelic football field was Brian McGilligan, you know, who he hit Jack Sheedy one day, you know, but maybe a wee bit late. Jack underestimated McGilligan's speed in the Croke Park ground. and Sheedy was carried off, you know. I can't remember who, I think it might have been Tommy Sugru who said, "Oh, you were very late there, Brian." And Brian said, "Earnestly, I got there as quickly as I could." And he was the strongest man I ever saw on the field. I mean, it just like a stone wall, you know, but the hardiest was Kieran McKeever. You know, right. Peter Canavan said it was my misfortune to be born in the same era as Kieran McKeever. I mean, he was, and a club mate of my own. I mean, I remember scoring a goal off in the Dungiven training one night, and on the Thursday night he came back and he says, "Oh, flip sake," because he didn't curse. He got married very young, so he never cursed. He said, "Flip sake and flimmin' hell and flip me, Joe," and you know. But he came back and he says, "Oh, I know what you did." He says, "I didn't sleep well last night," he says, "but you'll not do that in me again." This was training for Dungiven, the club. But no McKeever sort of discussion would be complete without his exploits against Donegal. You see, Brian McAniff and Eamon Coleman loathed each other.
Right.
You know, they're from very different social strata, you know. I mean, Coleman was a brickie and Brian was a sort of a lofty hotelier, you know. And there was a very bad ill feeling between Donegal and Derry, and particularly when Donegal beat us in the 92 Ulster final, because everybody expected us to wipe them out that day after we'd demolished Down in the semi-final. And they caught us that day and deserved to win. And then we played in the National League. It was a quarter final, and Manus Boyle was on McKeever, you see, and Manus was doing a bit of, you know, helping. Fergal McCusker told me a story afterwards, you know, Manus was doing a bit of the helping. And we were coming off at half time. McCusker said, "That was hilarious." He says, McKeever was saying to him, "Flip sake, Manus, would you stop that?" Obviously, then emboldening Manus to think, look, you know, I mean, who says flip sake? And a flimmin' hell, no, Manus, like, seriously, don't be doing that. Now try and behave yourself, you see. And then, of course, the next thing, there's Manus lying completely unconscious on the ground with the blood scooting out of his, I can still remember it, the blood was, it was like a Quentin Tarantino, scooting out of the gash above his eye where McKeever had hit him, you see. And the referee ran in and he said, "Oh, did anybody see what happened?" And McKeever said, "I think he fainted." And he then followed that up by knocking out Tommy Ryan. They then decided to have a friendly between Derry and Donegal up in Banagher. I mean, you couldn't make this up. And it was just absolute warfare. And Tommy Ryan was a very powerful fella. And no, he didn't play games off season then. And Tommy Ryan was at McKeever, you see, and bang, he was so powerful, and he was a great fist fighter, you know, and could handle himself 100%.
You were lucky that you were from the same club as him,
yeah.
In a way.
Well, if I was on McKeever, I wouldn't have been, you know, I mean, I wasn't dumb. Like,
you weren't doing any tricks around him.
You trash talked certain players, but not McKeever.
Come here, are you now reflective about things? Was it a period of reflection?
Well, I've always been reflective about things. I mean, I don't like permanence, you know, and I hate turning down an opportunity. I mean, because you never know what you're going to miss.
Hmm.
You ever read The Great Gatsby? You know, the narrator in The Great Gatsby standing on the bridge as the car goes past full of people that they're looking forward to the party, and he's dreaming of where they're going and, you know, itching to go there. I'd be like that, you know. So if I turned this down, I'd think, you know.
This
is Saturday night football too, which is,
yeah, it's great. The stuff under lights, and in fairness, Setanta turned that into a thing, and that's now air, like over 20-year period.
Yeah,
because these were league games that nobody else wanted at that stage, and then they came and they put production around it, and Dublin decided that the Croke Park thing and the Saturday night was going to be a thing. So it's actually proven that the league is the best competition the GA has. But I did.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Like in the first match there, I didn't realise this, but they told me today, and I've agreed to do 4 live programmes just to get the thing moving and to, you know, look, I'll love it. Like, I'm like a fish in water when it comes to the telly. I love the telly.
Yeah.
Like Ron Burgundy, you know. But they say we had a most enjoyable discussion. And they said, if this is grown up, I mean, if there's any interference, I'm not interested. They said, no, absolute independence, you know. Don't offend against the laws of libel, which I would never do anyway. I'm a barrister who's never.
We'll talk about that off air.
Not never sued.
Did I not write a column for you one time back in our Setanta days where we ended up having a little? Let's talk about that some other time, Joe.
Well, I thought you were going to say about the time that you got upset whenever I
didn't get upset.
Wrote about
the interview of Mick O'Connell.
Anton Deck.
And you would hear it. And you would fucking hear it. And I thought, I was writing it, and the fucking tears were coming down my face. It was like Seamus Heaney being interviewed by Anton Deck. And I laughed out loud, and my partner said to me, "What have you written? What have I said?" "You're not saying it. You're not. It's gone." I knew you'd be so annoyed by that.
Well, there was no libel involved.
Thank you for your reaction today. I can see you still feel it after all these years.
That was the
what age are you? He says, "What age am I? By are you?" Do you remember?
That was the edited version that went out. There was a much longer version which we should actually put out now at this stage.
I thought it was absolutely priceless.
Statute of limitations.
It was a collision of two eras.
It was. It was. It was just a. Oh, we couldn't communicate with him properly. We couldn't access him.
I don't think anybody could. He's not a YouTuber.
He's not a YouTuber. No. Can I ask you though, if you're always reflective, the rest of the way that the GAA world is going at the moment, I feel like the culture war is ongoing at the moment, and the power of the senior round county teams, and we've spoken about this a good bit over the years, that is a runaway train, right? But yeah. I do feel like the GPA have constantly been somebody that you've kind of fingered as part of the problem as opposed to...
But again, the GAA allowed that problem to develop. I mean, it was the GAA's inertia. The fact that they kept their head in the sand and hoped that it would go away that led to the GPA. It's exactly the same with the Club Players Association. It's astonishing in the GAA when the primary duty is the club players, that the club players have felt the need to form an association. And we see again precisely the pattern that occurred with the GPA. Now, the difference, of course, is that the GPA are closer to the money, you know, so they were able to be disruptive and threaten and all those sorts of things. But the real problem, of course, is the length of the county season. So you condense that, you turn it into a four-month festival of football, you get rid of the FBD League, the McKenna Cup. I mean, Terry Donnelly said not even the McKennas go to that anymore. The O'Byrne Cup. You get rid of all that nonsense. You have a four-month county season that's a league running into a championship, which is then tiered. Players from Leitrim will be prepared to say, "Here, yeah, I'll play for 4 months."
Yeah.
You have a rule that your club's the primacy of the club, and like the soccer situation, the clubs release the players to the county, and that's how it works. Now you've got a summer, or you've certainly got holidays.
Yeah.
You've got a 2-3 month break at the winter time, and now you're restoring your work-life balance. You're able to have a relationship. You're able to develop your career.
The games are actually better as well.
Games are better because...
And they're higher profile, and we're waiting for them all year, and we're talking about what's going to happen.
Absolutely. It's more exciting. You've got a festival of football. And the other thing is this. This long season, what has this done? Right? And I've seen this. Right? So you'll see in Leinster, for example, where it used to be nip and tuck, and everybody gets stuck in and have a go. It didn't matter who you were. Like, Louth could come out and beat the Dubs, you know. Well, you see that with the orthodoxy, the professional bandwagon that comes along with all of this, and the GAA shoehorning, you know, allowing a professional system to be shoehorned into an amateur sport, what you see is boredom, hopelessness. The coaching orthodoxy that has sprung up since Jimmy McGuinness's era, no fault of Jimmy's really, because there was a misinterpretation of what Jimmy was doing.
Yeah.
But that coaching orthodoxy, what we now have is what I call, for 95% of county teams, going through the motions football. They're not going out to win. The purpose of the game is to try to win. The underdog goes out and says, "Let's get fucked into them, boys." And that's what used to happen all the time. And every match had pitfalls. Every match, whenever we were the preeminent team in Ireland, four national leagues in all Ireland, we probably should have won more. Every match was a potential banana skin because you knew everybody was coming for you. You watch in Leinster now, everybody, they stand off Dublin, they drift back into their defence, they're playing formulaically.
It's pointless. The whole thing is pointless.
Because the point of the game is to win. Mm. That's it. Doesn't matter who you are, who you're playing against.
Even the games between evenly matched sides are pointless because ultimately they're going to run into Dublin at some point. So that whole competition, because it has a superpower. Like, yeah.
But the reason that a superpower exists is because of this 10-month season that it's okay, Dublin can handle that. They can handle that. They have the resources to handle it. They're at the top of their game. They've got the players, etc., etc., etc. Nobody else can handle that. So what does teams... So Leitrim are out pounding the training pitch now, like four nights a week. Okay,
yeah.
They get slaughtered by Roscommon at the weekend in the FBD League.
And a bunch of players walk away.
No. What do those Leitrim players do in their mind? They know, okay, we're fucked. We're not going to win anything. You know, they go through the motions. They keep the county jersey. They go in there, but they play. They go through. Derry are exactly the same. We're a county, a really proud county, that now play go through the motions football. You know, we don't go out and have a crack at Tyrone. It's embarrassing. We've got Rory Gallagher there now, you know, following a tradition of managers in the recent past who have just played don't get beaten football.
There's a 4-month season. How does it, just explain to people how that might have an impact.
A 4-month season, you're costing the county board a third of what you were costing them. Right? So you reduce the expenditure by 70%.
We're spending 30 million a year roughly on international teams.
And county boards are on the verge of bankruptcy everywhere. And there's only a finite amount of money. And they've completely neglected their primary role, which is to look after the good health of the clubs and the GA communities. So you condense, the first thing you do is you reduce that expenditure by two-thirds. Right? Second thing now is that you've got an amateur game again. Right? Suddenly you've got an amateur game again where the players are primarily club players. If you're a club footballer now, or if you're a county footballer now, you're not playing for your club at all. You do not play for them at all, maybe twice a year. Depends how many matches you have in the championship. And that's it. That's a charade as well, because it disheartens the club. It disheartens the club players, and it disheartens most definitely the supporters who don't see their best players any longer.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever me, McGilligan, Kieran McKeever, three All-Stars were playing for Dungiven, like, we played every match. And if you weren't there, you'd say, like, what's going on? What's going on here? You know, and we see this. Again, that's a problem that you solve by condensing. Once you've got the finances, the surplus finances, and you no longer need all this money, you know, now you've completely changed everything. Boys are prepared to sacrifice 4 months of their life.
Joe, in the likely case that things stay the same, because that often happens in the GAA.
Look at the CPA's recommendations were completely rejected. And you know what John Horan said last week? I mean, the president of the GAA, which illustrates the point, he said that the fixtures problem is unsolvable.
Look, it's the leadership is supposed to come from the elected. It's supposed to be the president. Will Jarlath Burns, for example, be able to fix this?
No, because you need to be radical in order to protect the GAA community. You must be radical. You must have a social strategy. You must have a political strategy. We don't have a single lobbyist in the Dáil. The most important political grouping in Ireland, you know, from the most important community organisation in Ireland. We don't have a social strategy. So we're great at wakes and funerals. Geez, we'll direct your cars and we will put our shoulder to the wheel for the grieving family. And we will spend nights without sleep, you know, and we'll make sandwiches and we'll be there for you through thick and thin. We need to translate that into something more permanent. You know, we need to have political influence as well. Because look at the power that we're wasting. I mean, in the north, the GAA put a lobbyist into, the Ulster Council put a lobbyist into Stormont, Ryan Feeney. We brought in over 140 million. Every club in the north has a state-of-the-art floodlight. That's just one small example. 65 million allocated to the Casement project. Obviously, we have sectarian issues in the north which are holding that back. But that's a small illustration. And yet all the hierarchy in Croke Park interested now is the All-Ireland semi-finals and finals. That's the year. How much commercial revenue can we gather around that? How much can we charge? You know, and that's it. So that's there. And you look at this Mayo problem. The GA, they say, so we're happy to help. What help? What? Do what? Do what exactly? Nothing. You know, look at Galway. Look at Cork. I mean, Cork's completely out of control. Yeah. Completely out of control with a 35 million debt. You know.
The solution
it's not
to that,
good enough.
But is the solution to have a finance person who works across a couple of different counties full time, who's a full time employee? Like, is that the type of stuff that we need to get to? Like,
the sort of radical thinking that you really need is to say, okay, look, we're going to forget about the. Let's start with what you would do if you were starting now. You would say, okay, look, let's forget about the British drawn county boundaries. Okay, let's create 32 geographical units if that's the number of units that we want to have. Okay. Divide them up by population. We pull the sponsorship. We pull the commercial revenue. We cut this down to a 4-month, 3-month festival of football. Even the clubs stay the same. Right? The club is the primary unit of the game, but we have representational football. That'll be terrific. Nobody complains about it in Kerry. Whenever East Kerry come out and they play brilliant football, an amalgamation of five junior clubs, so you wouldn't see otherwise.
Mm.
What's there to be afraid of? I mean,
change.
Did you watch? Change. Did you watch career. Clifford playing for East Kerry in the championship this year on RTE? I mean, did you watch that?
Yeah, it was class.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Festival of football. You see the best players. You know, you watch them in a competitive environment.
Suddenly, the young
no
lads
point in the
dumpster.
There's no point in Conor Callan and Paul Mannion and those boys coming out and battering poor old Wicklow, like.
Yeah.
You know, and doing the interviews beforehand. Oh, you know, Wicklow, great team. Great, you know, their goalkeeper might be an under 14, but you know, he's the most promising under 14 in Wicklow, you know. We'll be paying them full respect, you know. And it's all a sham, you know. And of course, it's a, I suppose sport is this anyway, a triumph of hope over reality. But we've taken it to extremes in the GA. The system makes no sense. And what you need is, you need a small board of high-powered people. We have a load of high-powered people. You know, people who run major businesses, major financial organisations, major tech businesses, who'll come up and give, you know, do a brilliant part-time job. And that, there should be a star chamber that organises the GAA. You know, and we need fundamental root and branch reform, because we're not going to survive as we are. Basically what we are, the strength of the GAA at the moment is this, that the parents will go down at underage level, and from about 6 to 16, they'll do all the coaching and they'll have all that flurry of activity.
Yeah.
But it's becoming like mini rugby. Our participation rates, we drop 80% when boys hit 17, 18. After minor level, they're gone. We don't see them again.
There's no games. There's no structure.
There's no games.
Fixtures.
There's no recreational football.
Yeah, there's no 5-a-side.
There's no over 40s.
Yeah.
You know, we don't, unlike soccer where you can choose and you play 20 games a year. I mean, we have just said it's all about elitism, forget about that. And we say, look, and we're really, really lucky to have teams like Corrifin playing football and Dublin playing football. But what's beneath that?
It doesn't sound like you're in any way confident that there's going to be change. Is that your next...
Well, what inspires you to think that there's going to be radical change?
Because there hasn't been for a long time. You judge an organisation by its form. And the form of the GAA in recent past has been a non-radical movement on certain things.
Yeah,
but why do you think
there will be change?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think there will be.
No, I mean, Tom Ryan said that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. John Horan says the fixtures problem is unsolvable. And without condensing the county season will have a dramatic and comprehensive effect on the health of the GAA.
And the individual players.
Well-being of the players.
Yeah.
It'll restore the life balance. It'll bring back the spark to the game. It's too long. It's too dull. And you see that with the players.
Well, if you're a Kerry footballer, you kind of need to be, Maria, at least fully fit for the start of the Munster Championship. And then also at the end of the season. They've condensed the season a little bit. So maybe there are no longer the 9 and 12 week layoffs or the 9 week layoffs that they used to have.
There's no break anymore. Players are just training through.
Yeah. Who can change this? Like because it's actually,
you need one strong leader in the GAA because
do you have a
name? Because we're leaderless. Well, I mean, Gilroy would have been perfect. He would have been perfect. Liam Sheedy would have been a very, very good leader. A lot of promise, prepared to delegate, to bring in expertise, to bring in people to, you know, and he made it down to the last two, but it was an awful shame because Liam's charismatic. He would have been, you know, honestly striving to succeed, you know, honestly striving on a day-by-day basis. Like, I mean, I'll tell you the sort of person Liam Sheedy is. He came to the opening of the Mayo Hospice in Castlebar because he wanted to see this triumph of communitarianism with his own eyes. He travelled up from Tipperary to the opening of the Mayo Hospice, standing up the back chatting with him, you know, and still very hurt about not getting it, you know, because he would have been a terrific director general.
I'm sure Tom Ryan's track record qualified him for the position is the thing. And
tell me what that track record was, remind me.
Being the head of finance of the organisation, and the finances of the GAA are in rude health when you compare them to other sports organisations at central level.
Administratively we're good, but we've come to the limits of that now.
Well, so I think that might be it. Tom Ryan might be a brilliant finance director and probably could have stayed in that role forever, and that would have been fine.
But as a finance director, great.
But it's set up, the organisation is actually set up to have a Politburo and what's supposed to be the visionary aspect of it, which is where the elected representatives come from. But Congress is set up to vote for lads who've been to Congress for 25 years.
The clubs send all their worst people to the county board now. You know, the clubs really are completely disenchanted with what's happening at county level. Let's take Mayo as an example. So in Mayo, for example, you may get the superficial impression that they're a united county because they have such an avid sort of super fan following, right? Which is great, and football is a religion in Mayo, and it's a brilliant county. I love the county. I mean that sincerely. The people are magnificent. I spend as much time there as I can, you know. But beneath that, there are clubs falling apart. There's huge distrust between the board and the clubs. I mean, really, there's open warfare. And we see that in what's been happening over the last 9 months. Now, what will be done to address that? And the answer is nothing can be done.
No.
Because whilst this, as you describe it, this out-of-control train of senior county football does what it does, they're just being dragged along behind it.
You're not very hopeful at the moment.
Yeah, but I mean, I've set out a series of blueprints over the last 15 years.
And does it gain traction? Is that gaining traction?
Well, it gains traction with the GA people. But you just become a figure to be feared then, with the hierarchy. You know.
It seemed like you had a relationship with Pádraig Duffy.
Well, it didn't. You know, I mean, like, Pádraig came to meet me on a number of occasions and asked me for support in relation to various things. And, you know, I couldn't support him. You know, he said, can you stop writing this stuff? Now, it has an effect, you know. And they meet and they discuss these things. But, you know, the problem is that they, like any very stagnant insular organisation, the greatest terror they have is change. What's he going to do, this outsider who's very bright, who's very strategic? You know, what's he going to do if we bring him in here? Now, we know what he's going to do because he's one of our dudes. Now, he's been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
And he's safe, you know, and he can be controlled. But a new leader who might take us in all sorts of unknown directions, you know.
What's next for you after this? Obviously, you have a lot of energy and you want to keep going. You're not going to get back on TV with RTE, so what?
I'm going to cut the ribbon on Saturday at the Connacht Pitch's new opening. I mean, I'm a very privileged person. I get invited to these types of things all the time. And then people come up, you know. People have always felt the need to confess to me or to reveal their inner secrets, which is a great privilege as well, you know. People come up to me and say, I must tell you a great story for your column. You know, and often it does. It makes a great centerpiece. You're writing 50 columns a year. You know, it's good
some
to
help.
Have. Yeah, just keep you moving. You know, get you moving and inspire you a bit. So I'll be there on Saturday morning with my young boys. He's the Antrim under 20 captain, and they're playing Louth to qualify for the knockout stages if they beat Louth on Saturday morning. So my life's GAA. All the, you know, like I'll be at the club final on Sunday, obviously. Be great fun. And, you know, I have a very varied life. I mean, I'm starting a trial tomorrow in Newry.
So you're still working?
Oh, yeah. And then, you need some way to fund your altruism. Yeah. You need to fund it, like you can't. And
the altruism
and also
wasn't
it's a
always
great
part of your life. It was when you gave the kidney away that you realised that something has to change, right?
It was always a community person, but, you know, that was a very radical change after that because you saw the suffering of other people properly. You actually felt it for the first time. And then that journey into transplant and cystic fibrosis and all, I mean, that was shocking for me to see, you know, our neighbours, you know, under our noses suffering so terribly, you know. And so, you know, it was an easy, like it was no great, I could never understand when people compliment you for altruism because there's nothing as selfish as the pleasure you get from altruism. You know, everybody should be doing it.
That's why it's powerful. You've been very good with your time. Your first game is the Dublin-Kerry match?
No.
No?
No, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they sold
Dublin-Kerry, okay.
Game to RTE.
Right.
Aired it.
Yeah, so your first game?
So there's a simulcast. But the first game we're doing then, which is the same as that, is Mayo against Donegal and Ballybuffet.
You're in Ballybuffet.
Which will be tremendous fun, you see, because, you know, the Donegal ones are good crack and the Mayo ones.
They love
that. That'll be fun. And it's pitch side, you see. So that'll be rousing, I would imagine.
You need an umbrella to.
I'm genuinely looking forward to it because I don't like closing down the options. I mean, if I like to open them up and, you know, try things and push myself and go for the unexpected. Like the TV's easy for me because I love the telly.
Well, best of luck with it, Joel. Thanks very much for joining us today.
It's my great pleasure.
OTB. A. AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.